ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and it's great to be here this afternoon. And, of course, Dave Allen is my co-host today, and we are going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy hump day, Melody.
Now, I didn't say it was Wednesday yet.
That's okay.
Were you not paying attention? It's Wednesday. What day is that, Dave?
That is Happy Hump Day, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, it is. It's August 21st, 2019. Thank you for joining us today. We have Wendy Wilson here in just a few minutes. But first, we're going to go ahead and get to the precious metals markets. And, of course, there was Fed speak today. And hit gold a little bit today. But I think the big speech, Dave, I think is on Friday. I think, isn't
yes.
Chairman Powell expected to make some sort of a statement or speech coming out of Jackson Hole?
Yes, he is.
So I guess the markets are more in tune to that than anything else. So we have gold today down 490 at 1502.90. Silver was down 3 pennies at 1721. Platinum, believe it or not, was the only precious metal up today, and that was by $4 at 856. Palladium was down 20 at 1478. The USDX today was up 12 at 98.27. Crude oil was down 36 at 55.77. And the paper markets today, of course, they're all positive. Let's see, you have the Dow up 241 points, 26,203. NASDAQ up 71 points, 8,020. S&P up 23 at 29.24. 10-year yield 1.58%. December contracts 15.12. London was up big over all European markets were higher yesterday. A little pressure on the Asian markets, but other than that, you know, it's just another day in the neighborhood and waiting for things to happen. But we happen to have Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs join us today, Wednesday, as she does each and every Wednesday. And we're so happy that we have her here. It's been a long time since you've been doing programs with me, Wendy.
Yeah, it's just been a week ago, Melanie. Hello, how are you?
How many years?
Oh, how many years? Over a decade, I'd say.
Probably.
Well, hey, Dave, don't want to ignore Dave. How you doing out there?
Hey, I'm doing great, thanks. Nice to hear you.
Oh, well, I thought we'd talk about an interesting thing where medicine was stunned when patients opted for natural medicine, and it was regarding cancer. So, you know, doctors are kind of stunned by that. And more people are really looking, they're taking a step to research treatments offered by all sorts of, whether it's modern medicine, natural medicine. People are really checking stuff out, and they should. And quite frankly, people are doing more research on just about anything that's impacting their lives. So not very accepting, though. Modern medicine not very accepting when patients challenge their treatments. They're not accepting also of a lot of the success stories when people are saying, hey, natural therapies are working. So most of the allopathic physicians really don't have that knowledge and experience in using the natural therapies, and it's really not an area they can explore and promote professionally, so why take the time? So there are also a few physicians, though, that do so discreetly, and God bless them. Now, if I had to sum up why people are looking to natural medicine, Melanie and Dave, to help them even with some challenging illnesses like cancer, there's two things. They can't afford the expensive treatments, or they don't want the toxic treatments. And the other thing is it's a matter of trust. Maybe they don't trust the treatments. So we're going to check out what Southwestern Medical Center in Utah was saying about their cancer patients using alternative therapies. So, you know, they used the word stunning, and that kind of made me think. Stunning suggests the scientists and the physicians were shocked, astonished, surprised, amazed, and even gobsmacked that a third of their cancer patients were successfully using natural therapies to deal with their cancer. And in their report, the combination of therapies those patients were using were meditation, yoga, acupuncture, massage, herbal medicines, and other supplements. So this research did get published in the Journal of the American Medical Association of Oncology. It was published April 2019. And the physicians really aren't in the habit of asking patients if they're using alternative therapies. So according to their report, doctors at Utah Southwestern Medical Center are requiring patients to disclose this information now. Here is a quote from Nina Sanford, Dr. Sanford, professor of radiation oncology and gastroenterology at Southwestern Medical Center. She says, herbal supplements were the most common alternative medicine, followed by chiropractic care. Interesting, isn't it?
Yes, I think it is, very.
She goes on to say, our research suggests our younger patients and our women are more likely to use the complementary or alternative medicine option. We also learn that patients often do not tell their physician they're using these treatments, especially if the physician doesn't ask. And then she also says, myself and other cancer specialists agree this is concerning, especially in the case of herbal supplements. So they really need to know what you're using. And we'll get into that in a minute, because mixing treatments can be an issue you need to be aware of. Now, Dr. Sanford also mentions that patients that they were surveying said that the reason they really didn't tell their doctor they were using other forms of treatments is because they didn't think the doctor needed that information. So that's kind of an interesting statement, because from the patient's perspective, they know medical physicians really don't deal with the natural area, and they really don't know much about them, so why bother advising them on it? But that's their viewpoint, you know, why say anything? But again, mixing treatments can be a problem. There's really this unknown area a lot of times when you mix natural therapies with a lot of allopathic medical treatments. And so mixing herbs, let's say with chemo drugs and even radiation, isn't what I would do, okay? I wouldn't think that the yoga and the massage and the chiropractic care is a problem, but when you're starting to use medicinal herbs with other chemicals from prescription meds, that can be a problem. Here's what Dr. Sanford says. We have really no idea on certain supplements that patients are using during radiation treatments. It could interfere. Basically, they say we worry about the high levels of antioxidants in the herbal supplements. It could cause a problem with the radiation, can make it less effective. So, what's your opinion of antioxidants? Because most people are talking about reducing their oxidative stress on the body, and antioxidants are a good thing. But when it comes to radiation and chemo, it's not. Think about that. It's something to think about. Dr. David Gerber, he's a lung specialist at Southwestern. He says physicians really need to know what supplements they're taking, because it can completely throw off our traditional cancer treatments. They say supplements can interfere with what we're giving our patients. Now, I have known that some physicians do tend to ban the use of supplements at the hospital during treatments, like you can't take your vitamin C, your vitamin E, your B vitamins, especially during cancer treatments. And I will say herbs can sometimes block the absorption of your prescription drugs or magnify them. So I typically don't advocate mixing herbal medicines with prescription drugs, but there are some exceptions, such as if you were taking a metabolic drug, you may want to wean off of that drug. So to avoid withdrawal and to something to get bridge the gap, you can use, for a limited time, you can use the herbal with the prescription for the purposes of weaning. We've done that before. Here's a quote from Nancy Myers. Now, she's a 47-year-old mother of four, and she was having cancer. She says, I wanted to use vitamin supplements during my cancer treatments, and I asked my doctor, and I was told I couldn't use them. One doctor said, quote, we don't know how supplements will interact with our conventional medicines. So after my treatment, I used turmeric, omega-3s, and vitamin D, and vitamin B6. And I know plenty of people in my cancer support group also using alternative therapies, and I know people who use these therapies aren't using just one therapy for treating their cancer. So people are, you know, they're getting bold and brave out there. They're looking for options. Any comments on this?
Well, my sister-in-law, Wendy, had a bout of cancer a year and a half ago, came through it with flying colors, I'm happy to report. But she's a certified massage therapist by profession, and who, on a monthly basis, I think she said, prior to cancer, you know, had been getting massages from one of her co-workers. They both work for a chiropractic practice. when you know, the treatment started, one of the things her oncologist said she could not do throughout you know, her treatments was massage.
Well, that's interesting because massage is one of those topical stimulants. You know, your nerve, you have more nerve endings in your skin than you do in your brain. Is that interesting or what? So when you touch the skin, you're stimulating not only your brain but all these organs within your system. So a lot of times the oncologists will say, you know, keep your regular exercise routine going. Because exercise is important. Well, it promotes circulation, but so does massage. So that's kind of interesting. The other thing that's wonderful about massage is it stimulates the lymphatic system. So if there's a reason the doctors didn't want the lymphatic system stimulated, that could be the reason why they don't want massage.
Her ovarian, what, some kind of female cancer had spread. Okay. To her lymph nodes, so perhaps that's why.
That could have been it, yeah. That could have been it, because typically circulation is a good thing. It brings healing, gets blood and oxygen and nutrition around the system to help regenerate and cells and help the body heal. So that could have been it. So Dr. Sanford was saying that she thinks people that, you know, opt to use natural medicines in lieu of the traditional cancer treatment, she thinks is dangerous. She knows the traditional medical cancer treatments. Sometimes, you know, if we look at the statistics, I know your sister had some success, and there are exceptions, but for a majority of people on the cancer regimens, on average, they live 2 to 5 years, okay? Mm-hmm. There are exceptions. So it's just the statistics showing you, and oncologists that are honest, they'll tell patients, you know, we don't cure cancer. We just slow it down and delay it, the inevitable. And do you know what remission means, Dave?
When they say,
okay. So remission isn't a cure. It just means, in medical terms, a lessening of symptoms.
So it's on hold, kind of.
It is. And so she has to be on guard and be real careful not to let that raise its ugly head again. So, you know, whenever she gets stressed or immune system dips, she's going to be in the danger zone. So real important. Also,
no stress.
And the other thing that was really interesting is Belindy Shembrock. She's a 53-year-old lady in Dallas. She went through the traditional medical cancer treatments, she said that she had neuropathy, nerve pain from the chemotherapy, and she said the yoga helped with her nerve pain. She highly recommends these natural therapies to anyone. So it's real important that we understand going in all the risks, and a lot of patients don't ask, and if you don't ask, you're probably not going to get those answered. So it's real important that chemo and radiation, chemo especially for breast cancer areas, and radiation there, it can damage the heart. People don't understand. You can wind up with congestive heart failure from cancer treatments for breast cancer. So it's typical. It's very typical.
Yikes.
I know. Well, and you want to keep that regular exercise. Now, real quick, so we have a little time left. I want to mention that the Columbia University School of Public Health also witnessed that people using natural therapies in early stage breast cancer, they said, was very therapeutic. They noticed that when the women, this was also published in the JAMA Journal of Oncology in May 2016, they said that when the women use vitamins, minerals, herbal supplements, massage, and meditation, they a lot of times didn't have to go through the traditional chemo treatments. Here's a quote from Dr. Heather Greenlee. She's the professor of epidemiology at Columbia School of Public Health. She said, women who used supplements and other alternative medicines were less likely to need chemotherapy compared to those who did not use those therapies. So in the beginning, they were diagnosed. They said, you have to have chemo. They did a lot of these natural things, and they were able to get treated without chemo. So there's a good option there. In their research, they said women who used the alternative therapies for 12 months, 87 to 89% of these women were able to avoid chemotherapy that was originally recommended to them. And the use of the alternative and complementary medicines, those use among patients with breast cancer has increased in the last 20 years, so more women are going that way. So the most commonly used natural therapy was supplements, massage, and meditation. Overall, patient reports using three or more alternative therapies. So they weren't just using one. They typically used a combination of more than one natural therapy. So people just need to do their homework whenever they're researching treatments for themselves. It's a personal decision. But I think options are good. The more information you have, I think the more informed decision you'll make, you know?
Definitely. Yeah.
You know, I remember Dr. Stan Monteith, when he passed away, he had cancer. He had a rare blood type cancer. And what kept him going, he was doing radio programs. He was 83, 84. He was doing radio programs up until, a week before he passed away. And what he did is he followed the alternative to keep his strength while he was going through this chemo. And, you know, that's how, what kept him going was, in addition to what he was doing was his intakes of food and so forth and whatever regimen he followed, the alternative, it kept him his strength.
Right. I know the Europeans will use periwinkle to significantly lessen the symptoms of nausea, chemo brain, all those side effects from the treatments. A lot of people are doing that too, which, you know, a lot of the oncologists are okay with that. Personally, I would be using my blood cleansing herbs, all my cleanses, and my dandelion root, my immune boosting herbs, because the immune cells keep cancer cells in check. So usually people with cancer have a toxic overload and a low immune system, typically. Mm. Yeah. Mm. So cleanse and nourish out there. That's my advice.
you mentioned something. You have a cancer support group?
No, this lady did.
Okay.
Ms. Meyer, right. She said that people in her cancer support group were using alternative therapies, medicines for their cancer. So especially post-treatment, I think a lot of them will try it post-treatment because they'll go by their doctor's advice, I don't want you on that, and they don't. But post-treatment, they usually can use a lot of that stuff. I know a lot of people feel very weak after that, so when they get those plant proteins going in the system, it just lifts them up and they feel amazing. So there's options out there.
And who are they going to call, Wendy?
Oh, they're going to call us at Apothecary Herb because we got a free catalog we can send and they can explore those options. The number is toll free at 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, thepowerherbs.com. And hurry, our Herbal Detective program mystery coupon, saving coupon, ends on the 26th, so don't delay.
All right, Wendy, we appreciate you being here. We're heading into a break, and we'll talk to you next week, Wendy. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back right after these few short commercials.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. And let's see, where are we going to head today? We're going to head right into the Fed's July meeting minutes. And we saw pressure on gold after they were released. What time were they released today? About 2 o'clock. 2 o'clock they were released. So we did see the pressure on gold, and it fell to around the $1,500 in the hour or so after the minutes went public. And, of course, so we saw silver do the same thing. And, of course, the stocks rose early today, supposedly all from Target and Lowe's. Uh-huh, Target and Lowe's. They had strong earnings report. I wonder if they're the same earnings report, or if they report the same way that Disney does. But, hey. But in the hour or so after the release of the Fed's benign minutes, paper markets still held fairly steady. And as I reported when we went into the beginning of the program. But, and again, we're hearing confirmation, President Trump, the administration, of course, they are on the offensive, saying against a multitude of evidence to the contrary that the U.S. is not headed for an economic recession. Although, Dave, I did see a comment from him that he says if we do go into one, it'll be mild.
Oh, well, there were also rumors swirling around D.C. this morning that the White House was considering cutting payroll taxes. Although Trump reversed course on that later in the day. He continues to rail against the Fed, saying if Jerome Powell would use his head, the Fed would cut interest rates. However, the president said he did not demand that Powell cut U.S. interest rates. And in responding to comments about how prolonged trade wars could send the U.S. and the global economy into recession, Trump said, "This isn't my trade war. This is a trade war that should have taken place a long time ago. Somebody had to do it," the president said. And he added while looking to the heavens, "I am the chosen one." So, I'm not sure how you follow that one up, other than to say the European markets took in stride last evening's resignation of Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte, something we'll talk about later on in the program if we have time.
I know. To me, that's fascinating. And it's I saw the headlines on that yesterday. And, I mean, it was just like, you know, the Italian government has collapsed. And I don't know if that was what the headline was. So I'm glad we're going to talk about that later on in today. But also, Dave, the payroll tax, they can't cut that. That's where Social Security comes from.
Right. Right. Although that was cut, if you remember, I forget now how long, if it was for a full year or a little bit longer under the previous administration, right at the height of the downturn, the onset of the Great Recession. So it's been done in the past. It certainly didn't do anything to shore up the Social Security system. I don't believe that was done in reality as a loan. I think that was just, for however long the lower payroll tax rate was in effect, it just, there wasn't any money or there was that much less money going into the Social Security trust funds.
Well, supposedly, I can't remember the exact number, it was like $225 billion or similar, somewhere around in that area that it cost for that program.
That sounds right.
and if they did it this time, but at that point in time, we were coming out of the Great Recession, supposedly that would help generate some, you know, income, you know, or some spending for the people. This time around, it would cost like $300 and some billion, depending on the length of term and how much, I guess. And again, if we're in a great economy, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
What's the point? And I saw an article, I don't know if we're going to talk about it, maybe when we come back from the break, just about it's people should be worried. You know, we talked about how great the retail was, all these great numbers on the retail, and all you see is headlines. Oh, the consumer is strong. The consumer is going to hold up. Well, one person points out, it's like, don't look at that number. Let's go back and look at some of the numbers that are being released by the government where wages are going down. Like, the trend is like 6 months. So that's what you need to look at. So less disposable income. And of course, the retail, as I said on here, all this great retail sales is all based on debt. You cannot continue in an economy like this when all on the back of the consumer when you have wages dropping. But
yeah, well, so are stock buybacks. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, about how that being financed by debt and the impact that that could have. And by the way, another recession indicator that's been reliable in the past is, I'm not sure if as much so as an inverted yield curve, is the sale of RVs, recreational vehicles, are down 20%. And so I forget where I what the source of that was, who said that's been a reliable source or a reliable indicator of a coming recession. As well. So that's an interesting development.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And, you know, again, you know, we're hearing reports from your big mainstream that there's another one out there that's calling for a recession. That's Morgan Stanley. You know, it talks about the global economies are becoming contagious as we continue to see this weakness in the manufacturing sectors. Yet it's beginning to spread. The wheels for a slowdown are in motion. Even as we've been revising our growth projections lower, we continue to highlight that these risks remain decidedly skewed to the downside. And this is coming from their chief economist. So they're looking, they expect that if trade tensions escalate further, we will also enter into a global recession defined by them as global growth below 2.5%. And there was another interesting headline that I saw, and I was reading a little bit about it. It was about President Xi and how is he going to handle, you know, this trade. He can do it in a matter of two ways. He can, you know, gain his foot the way it's all about how he's going to play this. You know, can he play it? You know, he can either, the headline was something, he can either destroy Trump by this, or he could become basically a globalist and earn his way for, I don't know, recognition, so to speak. You know, and it's all how he handles also Hong Kong, how he handles these two issues will determine a lot about China and their president, Xi. And it's kind of true, Dave, but.
Well, yeah. Well, there's also the loss of momentum in payrolls data over the past 7 months, falling to 141,000 on a six-month moving average, you know, and that's down from 234,000 a month in January. And, you know, the Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index has fallen to its lowest level since September 2009. So more and more flashing signs pointing to recession, ladies and gentlemen.
And, you know, the administration, President Trump, continues to point to the Fed. And he claims that it's going great with China and other trade deals. And the only problem, as you mentioned, is Jay Powell. And so this is yesterday, the highest dollar in U.S. history. Well, it really isn't the highest dollar in U.S. history, but and no inflation. And he says, wake up, Federal Reserve. He tweeted that. I don't know if he tweeted that today or yesterday. I'm not quite sure. But it was unclear what the highest dollar in his U.S. history was referencing. And so
Yeah, the president, as we know, has railed a lot against the Fed the past year. However, that's not been enough for the president, who earlier this week called for a full percentage point reduction and even brought up the idea of more quantitative easing by the Fed. Now, investors got a closer look this afternoon at the thinking behind last month's rate cut when the Federal Open Market Committee released the minutes from its July meeting. In it, we learned that Fed officials who voted to lower interest rates 3 weeks ago agreed that the move shouldn't be moved as an indication that there is a preset course for future cuts. This is where Melody's adage that words matter come in. The summary indicated that policymakers viewed their move as a mid-cycle adjustment. So markets have been pricing in a series of rate cuts, so Powell's use of the term mid-cycle adjustment has spread concern that the Fed just might not be as accommodative with policy as anticipated as, you know, recently as a week ago.
Well, you know, I just saw a breaking headline, Dave, since we're on this topic, and I know you follow this, but this was just released. The spread between the yield and the 10 and the 2-year note turned negative for the second time in 1 week. And again, you know, the big headline that this is a recession warning.
Yeah.
That's flashing. Yeah. And so, I mean, this is a, you know, I mean, this is an omen seen by many veteran traders and those that, you know, understand the yields and the meaning behind it all. Right before we came on to the program, the yield in the 10-year Treasury was higher at 1.579, and the 2-year was 1.573 after briefly entering negative territory. The spread was last seen at a positive 1.5 basis points following its brief inversion shortly before the 4 p.m. Eastern time. So
that's narrow. That is really, really narrow.
And so I think Friday is going to be a wild day. If markets are basing or waiting to see what comes out of Jackson Hole with his speech on Friday, I don't know. It could be a crazy day.
It could. It could. I just have a feeling, I mean, just having gotten to know Powell over, you know, the course of his early years as chair, that people are looking for something major are going to be disappointed. That I suspect it's going to be a ho-hum speech. But, I mean, number one, I could be wrong. And number two, in its ho-humness, even if it is ho-hum, as I say, you know, there could be some phrases in there that certain types of investors and traders are going to pick up on. And their computerized algorithms that could do just as you say, Melody, send the markets into a little more chaos.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think right now there's too much speak coming from everywhere.
And, indeed.
You know, I mean, at one point in time, I remember when Greenspan, oh my God, it used to drive me insane, you know, when he was walking into, he'd be carrying his briefcase and everybody would be talking about how big his briefcase was and what he was going to do. And I mean, everybody, I mean, it was just so focused on just this one man. Now it's everybody.
go ahead.
Yeah. And so that's a sign of just how crazy everything has become.
There's a line in a Bruce Springsteen classic song, Jungleland, where he writes, and the poets down here don't write nothing at all. They just stand back and let it all be. It sounds like perhaps this is the time for a little bit more of that melody, you know?
Maybe.
Shut up for a little while.
Corporate debt passes $1 trillion. Dollars, U.S. corporate bonds. Yeah, how about that? Aren't the only. And we talked about yesterday, Greg Hunter was on the program, how PIMCO, you know who PIMCO is, they're cutting back on their treasuries. Yeah, they're cutting back.
Yeah.
But this is Where government bonds aren't the only instruments that are producing negative yields these days, corporate debt recently passed the $1 trillion mark, which is again a continuing sign of global financial displacement. And if I remember correctly, it was only $90 billion in January.
In fact, I saw a number today. I think it was $20 billion. But maybe that was last year.
Maybe a year ago. I mean, and now we're over $1 trillion. Various estimates of sovereign debt in that category put the total in excess of $15 trillion, a number that's been escalating over the past several years while central bank dives drive the interest rates to zero and below. Dangerous stuff.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, one analyst said we read the interest rate risk that these bonds carry is huge. The financial system doesn't work with negative rates, this person said. If the economy recovers, the losses that investors would take are unlike anything we've ever seen. Negative yields have been confined to the places outside of the U.S., though some Fed officials have toyed with the idea, you know, at least in a hypothetical sense. Former Fed Chair Alan Greenspan recently jolted some investors when he said there's nothing actually standing in the way of negative rates in the U.S. You mentioned that the other day on the program, Melody. Now, most of the negative yield in corporate debt's in Switzerland, while some of it's also in Japan. Investors don't actually pay to borrow money, but the negative yield is symbolic of how much above par, above face value, investors are willing to pay for these bonds.
You know, those who buy negative yielding bonds, basically they're making a bet that rates will stay low and prices will rise, which is a traditional relationship when it comes to fixed income. But even if these interest rates begin to rise just a little, that's going to start eating into the capital appreciation that bondholders have been, you know, kind of enjoying. And this example on the Swiss bonds, if yields on Swiss bonds just go up 2 percentage points, it means a 50% loss for holders. Now, you know, you might have some investors that might be able to absorb some losses, 50% loss, but they would be catastrophic for institutions. And on the sovereign debt side, Germany is the starkest example of negative rates, with yields all along the curve there trading to below zero.
Yeah, and that's pushed prices up dramatically. You know, in Tuesday trading, for example, in Germany, buyers were paying the equivalent of $196 for every 120-year German bunds, all for a technical yield of negative, roughly 0.4%.
The system doesn't work that way, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231. And the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. Wednesdays just goes by so fast when we have Wendy joining us for the first segment of the program. Friday, we're going to have James Corbett with My Conversation. We'll be recording that later this evening. And lots of things to ask him. And I should also ask you, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question for me, email it to me. DiscountGoldAndSilver@yahoo.com. DiscountGoldAndSilver@yahoo.com. If you'd like to have a question for James, I'd be more than happy to, or for us, for that matter. We don't take calls. We should. Things are beginning to get a little crazy and everything. But so maybe we'll begin to start adding that to in the future. The CBO. Something else that says deficits are going to be higher than previously thought. Well, you know what? It's always more than what they say and what we thought. I don't care what they, whenever government gives us numbers, they're always wrong. They're always going to be higher. They're never lower. They're always higher. But the CBO said that the tariffs that were projected to shrink GDP by 2020, of course, that's a code word for recession, and warned that further tariff hikes could stifle the long-term economic growth. The budget deficit is to hit $960 billion in 2019, and that's an average of $1.2 trillion a year. And again, they have to print. They're going to print. The budget, it's going to grow and grow and grow. And, I don't know what the final number is, Dave.
Well, we know that it's $63 billion more for just this fiscal year, which ends on September 30th, and that's mainly because of the massive new budget deal forged between both houses of Congress and was signed into law by the president in early this month, in fact. CBO Director Philip Swagel said federal debt, which is already high by historical standards, is on an unsustainable course. He said that the debt will rise even higher after 2029 due to the aging of the U.S. population, growth in healthcare spending, and rising interest costs. Swagel added, to put the economy on a sustainable course, lawmakers will have to make significant changes to tax and spending policies. And, while the trade war with China and the U.S. rages on, CBO also says tariffs imposed since January 2018 are projected to make U.S. GDP roughly 0.3% smaller than it otherwise would be. Now, the slowdown in growth in 2019, they claim, largely stems from slower growth in business investment.
Well, I just want to touch briefly, and mainly just the headline, because I really want to get on to the brevity is golden today, because it's fascinating. It's absolutely, it's frightening to see, but I do want to mention, we were going to talk a little bit about half of the stock buybacks are funded with debt.
That's just, you think about that, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And everybody just goes along with smiles on their faces. More than half of all buybacks are now funded by debt. They can't even use their money that they repatriated back that they got the deal on. Then they ran out of that. They only had 1 year to get the benefits of that, I think, Dave. So now they're turning to debt. And you know what my point is? This is the big issue. It isn't they don't care if the consumer out there pays 17% or 20% on their credit cards, or if they pay 3% on their home mortgages or 5% on their home mortgages. What I really believe this hit on these interest rates are having on these corporations on their debt. They cannot roll over their debt with these higher rates. They cannot do it. They don't have the money. And that is the issue. They need those lower rates for these multinational corporations. And the one thing that I really did get upset about hearing about how great of an American company Apple is. Apple is not an American company. It's a multinational company. And I don't think they should give – it bothers me when government makes special arrangements for any one company. It shouldn't be done.
Corporate welfare.
It's exactly what it is. And it's – I don't care who it is, what they do, it shouldn't be done. And that gets – so Apple, they can continue building the iPhone. And I have an iPhone for, what, pennies on the thousands of dollars that they charge you. And they're going to get breaks because of the tariffs and Huawei. Mm-hmm. Because of competition with Samsung. We're going to hurt that? The tariffs are going to hurt competition from Apple? Excuse me? They're the wealthiest company in the world. And we have to help them with competition. How bizarre and insane is that?
Well, with that, I mean, the level of buybacks that are being funded by, I mean, literally, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars of debt, you know, when this recession, you know, is full blown, I mean, it's already in some of the, some industries, but when it's full blown, and it's when, not if, the result is not going to be pretty for companies who've used a lot of this leverage. And now with corporate debt higher than its peak in late 2008, these overly leveraged companies could really have a tough time during the next recession, Melody.
And who's going to bail them out? That's what we got to look forward to.
Not you
and
me.
No, of course not. And then they'll do write some more. Oh, well, we got to be stricter. And we went, oh, it just is complete insanity. All right. Now, I wanted to talk about the Brevity is Golden. You call it the Texas Cybersaw Massacre. And it's cyber attacks. And I just want to inject this. We hear about little cyber attacks on cities. We had one in Baltimore. There was one in Florida. But this is Texas, and it was pretty severe.
Yeah, I mean, Texas is the largest state yet to be hit with a cyber attack, or in this case, a series of them. State officials there confirmed this week that computer systems in 22 of their municipalities have been infiltrated by hackers demanding a ransom. Mayor of one of those cities said the attackers are asking for $2.5 million to unlock the files they hacked. Investigators haven't yet identified who or what, you know, is behind the attack that took these systems offline, but the Texas State Department of Information Resources says the evidence so far points to one single threat actor, one person. Two cities so far have come forward to say their computer systems were affected. Officials in the town of Borger in the Texas Panhandle said the attack has affected city business and financial operations. Birth and death certificates are not available online as a result, and the city can't accept utility payments from any of its 13,000 residents. Keene, a city of 6,100 people outside Fort Worth, a much larger metropolis, was also hit, officials announced. The city's government is also unable to process utility payments. Keene's mayor Gary Heinrich said the hackers won a collective ransom of $2.5 million. He added there's no way his city will be coughing up anything for the hackers. Threat intelligence analyst Alan Liska said this is absolutely the largest coordinated attack we've seen. Liska's firm has found at least 169 ransomware attacks aimed at state and local governments since 2013, and already this year there have been 60. In recent months, as Melody mentioned, the data networks of Baltimore, I'll add the Georgia court systems and a county in Utah have all been hit by people seeking ransom. The hacker bait tends to come in the form of a seemingly benign email with links or attachments that, once open, can infect an entire system. Now, while the attackers tend to be anonymous and their locations undisclosed, Liska said its research has found that fewer based in the U.S. and tend to have operations based in parts of Eastern Europe or Russia. Recent study found that 17% of local agencies hit with ransomware viruses paid up. That's a practice federal law enforcement officials discourage, saying it incentivizes cyber criminals to keep engaging in the activity. I'm sure there were compelling reasons. Lake City, Florida, for example, a town of about 12,000 residents, officials there paid $460,000 in the form of Bitcoin, the preferred payment among many cyber criminals. Now, the ransom was paid by insurance, but taxpayers were still on the hook for a $10,000 deductible. Now, with these recent attacks on state and city governments, local officials are rushing to secure their computer systems and holding new training and backing up their servers. But in smaller cash-strapped localities, some of which we mentioned earlier, throughout Texas, there are challenges to building a security defense, mainly in the form of money or a lack thereof. One staffer from the Washington group ICMA, which represents city managers all over the world, said, "We might have thought this was a big city problem, or at least an affluent city or county problem. But I think what's clear now is just about any local government is vulnerable. It's a mean world out there, folks. If you're online, and most of us are, don't forget to make sure that you've installed a system, you know, like Norton, there are plenty others out there, to protect your own personal or at-home business information." And Melody, that is this week's Brevity is Golden.
You know, when Baltimore was having the issue, I remember they couldn't process real estate transactions.
Oh, my gosh.
So I think what they can and can't do, or what they are unable to do, I don't think they release, you know, because they don't want people, they don't want the people to know how frozen their system is.
Yeah.
And you know, and how far out does that go? I can remember at Johns Hopkins, I was up there. I mean, this goes back a couple years ago, and it was funny because they were having issues with their computers, and it was kind of leaked out that the whole system was frozen or something like that. And this was when these cyber attacks just started beginning. And I thought to myself, I wonder if they hadn't been hacked. Because then at that point in time, I think that, if I remember correctly, it was initial the hospitals. They would go to hospitals and do them, because, of course, you're going to get paid for a hospital. Mm-hmm. You know, a city government might, you know, tell you they're not going to pay you and so forth and whatnot. But hospitals are going to pay, I would think.
They probably have the more financial wherewithal too, wouldn't you think?
Yes. And something other interesting about that, Dave, what I find interesting is the amount of ransom is bigger than most. Usually it's always been, you know, something fairly quickly to, you know, $2.5 million has increased.
Yeah, that's not chump change. There are probably a good number of municipalities who don't have that kind of cash lying around. Most municipalities and school districts in Pennsylvania, for sure, and probably across the country, have cash shortages until their primary source of revenue, income, or property taxes starts coming in. They often have to take out a revenue anticipation note, so they're already on the hook for a low interest loan, but the cash that they eventually get got to pay that loan back by the end of the year. So it's interesting. Well, it's good that these places are insured for crises like this.
But you know, it's just another signal that when you have a major financial, or you have a great recession, another great recession, depression, I would think that these hackers would just capitalize on that chaos in the markets at that point in time.
Yeah, you know, it almost makes you wonder why there aren't, or are there, a lot more? And as you suggest, maybe just not being reported.
Possible. I don't know. It's, again, the computers. And you would also think that governments would have all the safety and security measures that could possibly be done. But again, guess what? They don't have the money to do it, just like what you said. We got about a minute. I just want to talk about Italy's prime minister. He did announce his resignation yesterday, Dave, and he made a blistering attack on his own interior minister, Salvini, and was accusing him of sinking the ruling coalition and, of course, endangering the economy for personal and political gain. And, I know.
This next part, though, I mean, you can just picture this happening.
Tell us about it.
Oh, no, just, you know, Conte, who, you know, is addressing a parliament after it was recalled from its summer recess, you know, to decide the future of, you know, the barely year-old government, you know, accused the League Party chief Salvini of seeking cash. He's got Salvini on one side, of literally sitting next to him as he's trashing him, the parliament. And it's things are rotten in Denmark
and Italy.
Indeed.
800-375-4188. We'll be back, unless Denmark is selling Greenland. But anyway, we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, be safe. Good night, and God bless.
Bye bye.
If I got me a wealthy man.